Section 3, New American Diplomacy, An American Story. Upon arriving in Panama in 1904, Dr. William Crawford Gorgas, a U.S. Army doctor and chief sanitary officer to the Panama Canal Project, quickly realized that death awaited American workers. The United States was about to begin constructing the Panama Canal to connect the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans. The task would be daunting because the dense jungles of Panama were home to swarms of mosquitoes that spread the deadly disease of yellow fever. Gorgas set out to lessen the threat of disease by keeping mosquitoes from breeding. He and his crew drained swamps, gullies, and other sources of stagnant water, a main breeding ground for mosquitoes. On those areas of water they could not drain, they spread kerosene and oil, which killed the mosquito eggs before they hatched. They also fumigated nearly every home in the region and destroyed many buckets, pots, and other outdoor containers that local residents let fill up with rainwater. In 2 years, Gorgas and his crew had wiped out yellow fever in the area. Adapted from The Strength to Move a Mountain. Theodore Roosevelt's Rise to Power. The construction of the Panama Canal might never have taken place had Theodore Roosevelt not become president. Teddy, as the press called him, gained the presidency largely by accident. Roosevelt's exploits during the Spanish-American War had made him famous and enabled him to win the election for governor of New York in November 1898. In 1900, President McKinley asked Roosevelt to run as his vice president. Less than a year later, a tragic turn of events thrust Roosevelt into the White House. The election of 1900. The election of 1900 once again pitted President McKinley against William Jennings Bryan. Bryan, an anti-imperialist, attacked the Republicans for their support of imperialism in Asia. McKinley focused on the country's increased prosperity. Employing the slogan, 4 years more of the full dinner pail, the Republicans promised good times ahead if McKinley was reelected. He did indeed win the election by a wide margin, and Theodore Roosevelt became vice president. On September 6, 1901, as President McKinley greeted the public during an appearance in Buffalo, New York, a gunman stepped from the crowd. The man was Leon Czolgosz, an avowed anarchist who opposed all forms of government. Czolgosz fired 2 shots and hit the president. A few days later, McKinley died from his wounds. Theodore Roosevelt, just 42 years old at the time, became the youngest person ever to become president. Roosevelt had been chosen as McKinley's running mate because Republican leaders knew his powerful charisma and heroic war record would be a great asset. They also hoped the relatively powerless position of vice president would quiet his reform-minded spirit. Now they cringed at the thought of a headstrong Roosevelt in the White House. Republican Senator Mark Hanna exclaimed, "Now look, that cowboy is president of the United States." Roosevelt becomes president. Roosevelt brought to the presidency an energy and enthusiasm rarely seen before in the office. Such vigor stemmed in part from his childhood. Born into a wealthy New York family, Roosevelt was a sickly child who endured a host of ailments, including poor eyesight and asthma. Roosevelt pushed himself to overcome his frailties. He mastered marksmanship and horseback riding and could row up to 20 miles a day. He took up boxing and wrestling in college and continued with both throughout his life, practicing the belief that competition and conflict keep one healthy. Roosevelt became a strong proponent of increasing American power on the world stage. Just as he refused to sit around idly in life, the president warned Americans not to sit huddled and become an assemblage of well-to-do hucksters who care nothing for what happens beyond. Roosevelt also accepted some of the ideas of Anglo-Saxonism. He believed that the United States had a duty to shape the less civilized corners of the earth. The new president intended to make the country a world power. Reading check. Summarizing, what was President Roosevelt's opinion on the role of the United States as a world power? American diplomacy in Asia. In 1899, the United States was a major power in Asia, with naval bases all across the Pacific. Operating from those bases, the United States Navy, now the third largest in the world, was capable of exerting American power anywhere in East Asia. The nation's primary interest in Asia, however, was not conquest, but commerce. Between 1895 and 1900, American exports to China increased by 4 times. Although China bought only about 2% of all the goods exported by the United States, the vast Chinese markets excited American business leaders, especially those in the textile, oil, and steel industries. The Open Door Policy. In 1894, war erupted between China and Japan over Korea, which at that time was part of the Chinese Empire. European and American leaders expected China, with its massive armed forces, to defeat Japan easily. These Western observers were astonished when Japan easily defeated China. In the peace treaty, China granted Korea independence. China also gave Japan territory in Manchuria that included the important city of Port Arthur. The war showed that Japan had successfully adopted Western technology and industry. It also demonstrated that China was far weaker than anyone had thought. Japan's rising power greatly worried the Russians. They did not want Japan to acquire the territory in Manchuria because it bordered Russia. Backed by France and Germany, Russia forced Japan to give the part of Manchuria it had acquired back to China. Then, in 1898, Russia demanded that China lease the territory to Russia instead. Leasing a territory meant that it would still belong to China, even though a foreign government would maintain overall control. Germany and France demanded leaseholds in China, and Britain insisted on several as well. Each leasehold became the center of a country's sphere of influence, an area where a foreign nation controlled economic development, such as railroad construction and mining. These events in northern China greatly worried the United States. President McKinley and Secretary of State John Hay both supported what they called an open-door policy, in which all countries should be allowed to trade with China. In 1899, Hay sent notes to countries with leaseholds in China, asking them not to discriminate against other nations that wanted to do business with the Chinese inside each leasehold. The Europeans and Japanese received the open-door proposals coolly. Each power claimed to accept them in principle, but refused to act on them unless all of the others agreed to do so as well. Hay refused to consider this a rebuff. Once he had received assurances from all of the great powers, he declared that the United States expected the other powers to abide by the plan. The Boxer Rebellion. While foreign countries debated who should control China, secret Chinese societies were organizing to get rid of foreign control. Westerners referred to one such group as the Boxers. In 1900, the group rose up to wipe out foreign devils and their Christian converts, who they believed were corrupting Chinese society. In what became known as the Boxer Rebellion, group members besieged foreign embassies in Beijing, killing more than 200 foreigners and taking others prisoner. In August 1900, an international force that included U.S. troops stepped in and quashed the rebellion. During the crisis, Secretary of State Hay and British leaders worked to persuade European nations not to use the Boxer Rebellion as an excuse to partition China. In a second set of open-door notes, Hay convinced the participating powers to back away from a full-scale retaliation against China. He urged them instead to accept compensation from China for any damage that the rebellion caused. After some discussion, China was never broken up into colonies. As a result, the United States retained access to China's lucrative trade in tea, spices, and silk, and maintained an increasingly larger market for its own goods. Balancing power in East Asia. As president, Theodore Roosevelt supported the open-door policy in China and worked to prevent any single nation from monopolizing trade there. This concern prompted Roosevelt to step in to help negotiate peace in a war between Japan and Russia in 1905. At a peace conference in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, Roosevelt convinced the Russians to recognize Japan's territorial gains and persuaded the Japanese to stop fighting and to seek no further territory. For his efforts in ending the war, Roosevelt won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1906. In the years after the peace treaty, relations between the United States and Japan steadily grew worse. As the two nations vied for greater influence in Asia, they held each other in check through a series of agreements. They agreed to respect each other's territorial possessions, to uphold the open-door policy, and to support China's independence. In 1907, President Roosevelt sent 16 battleships of the United States Navy, known as the Great White Fleet, on a voyage around the world to showcase the nation's military might. The tour made a stop in Japan to demonstrate that the United States could and would uphold its interests in Asia. This visit did not help ease the growing tensions between the two countries throughout the early 1900s. Reading check. Explaining. What was the purpose of the open door policy? A growing presence in the Caribbean. Theodore Roosevelt believed in a strong global military presence. He insisted that displaying American power to the world would make nations think twice about fighting, thus promoting global peace. He often expressed this belief with the West African saying, "Speak softly and carry a big stick." Roosevelt's big stick policy was perhaps the most evident in the Caribbean. Geography. The Panama Canal. One of Roosevelt's most dramatic actions in the Caribbean was the acquisition of the Panama Canal Zone in 1903. Roosevelt and others viewed the construction of a canal through Central America as vital to American power in the world. A canal would save time and money for both commercial and military shipping. As early as 1850, the United States and Great Britain had signed a treaty in which each nation had agreed not to build a canal without the other's participation. Because of its strong interest in a canal, however, the United States negotiated a new treaty. In 1901, the United States and Great Britain signed the Hay-Pauncefote Treaty, which gave the United States the exclusive right to build and control any proposed canal through Central America. A French company had begun digging a canal through Panama in 1881. By 1889, however, it abandoned its efforts because of bankruptcy and terrible losses from disease among the workers. The company was reorganized in 1894, but its operations practically ceased, and its only hope was to sell its rights to digging the canal. The United States had long considered two possible canal sites, one through Nicaragua and one through Panama. The French company eased this choice by offering to sell its rights and property in Panama to the United States. In 1903, Panama was still part of Colombia. Secretary of State Hay offered Colombia $10 million and a yearly rent of $250,000 for the right to construct the canal and to control a narrow strip of land on either side of it. Considering the price too low and afraid of losing control of Panama, the Colombian government refused the offer. Revolt in Panama. Some Panamanians feared losing the commercial benefits of the canal. Panama had opposed Colombian rule since the mid-1800s, and the canal issue added to the tensions. In addition, the French company was still concerned that the United States would build the canal in Nicaragua instead. The French company's agent, Philippe Bonneau Varilla, and Panamanian officials decided the only way to ensure the canal would be built was to declare independence and make their own deal with the United States. Bonneau Varilla arranged for a small army to stage an uprising in Panama. On November 3, 1903, Bonneau Varilla's forces revolted. Meanwhile, President Roosevelt sent ships to Panama to prevent Colombian interference. Within a few days, the United States recognized Panama's independence. Less than 2 weeks later, the two nations signed a treaty allowing the canal to be built. Protesters in the United States and throughout Latin America condemned Roosevelt's actions as unjustifiable aggression. The president countered that he had advanced the needs of collective civilization by building a canal that shortened the distance between the Atlantic and the Pacific by about 8,000 nautical miles, or 14,816 kilometers. The Roosevelt Corollary. The growing American involvement in foreign affairs caused Roosevelt to expand his big stick diplomacy. In an address to Congress in 1904, the president defined what came to be known as the Roosevelt Corollary to the Monroe Doctrine. In it, he said that the United States would intervene in Latin American affairs when necessary to maintain economic and political stability in the Western Hemisphere. Chronic wrongdoing may, in America as elsewhere, ultimately require intervention by some civilized nation. And in the Western Hemisphere, the adherence of the United States to the Monroe Doctrine may force the United States, however reluctantly, in flagrant cases of such wrongdoing or impotence, to the exercise of an international police power. Quoted in The Growth of the United States. The United States first applied the Roosevelt Corollary in the Dominican Republic, which had fallen behind on its debt payments to European nations. In 1905, the United States assumed the responsibility of collecting customs tariffs in the Dominican Republic, using the United States Marine Corps as its agent. Latin American nations resented the growing American influence in the region, but Roosevelt's successor, William Howard Taft, continued Roosevelt's policies. Taft placed much less emphasis on military force and more on helping Latin American industry. He believed that if American business leaders supported Latin America and Asian development, everyone would benefit. The United States would increase its trade, American businesses would increase their profits, and countries in Latin America and Asia would rise out of poverty and social disorder. Taft's policy came to be called dollar diplomacy. Although Taft described his brand of diplomacy as substituting dollars for bullets, in Nicaragua he used both. In 1911, American bankers began making loans to Nicaragua to support its shaky government. The following year, civil unrest forced the Nicaraguan president to appeal for greater assistance. American Marines entered the country, replaced the collector of customs with an American agent, and formed a committee of two Americans and one Nicaraguan to control the customs commissions. American troops stayed to support both the government and customs until 1925. Reading check. Describing, what did the Roosevelt Corollary state?